It's the story of a gentleman named Dan. He was a retired soldier, served through the Western European theater throughout World War II. By the time he returned home and retired from the service, he had witnessed from a front row seat the scourge of battle and the tsunami of human suffering that is always left in its wake. When he initially retired from service, he struggled a great deal with PTSD, and this was long before PTSD was a diagnosed condition. In 2017, the suicide rate among veterans, and attributed primarily to PTSD, clocked in at a staggering 22 individuals per day. But Dan was beating the odds. Dan had a family, a job, friends, and a long list of reasons to wake up and face each and every day. On the 50th anniversary of his retirement from the military, his friends and family thought it would be nice to throw a party for Dan, a big party. Dan didn't want a party. He told his family he didn't want a party. But celebrations are exciting. Celebrations are exciting, and his loved ones were eager to show honor to this individual in their lives that was more than worthy of their honor. So, invitations were sent out, travel plans were made, caterers were hired, speeches were written, and to top the evening off, his employer chipped in a $7,000 chunk of cash for fireworks to end the night, to be the finest display of fireworks that the small town of Chesterton, Indiana had ever seen. The evening went off without a hitch. Bellies were full of seafood casserole and cake. Champagne glasses were empty. Cousins were tipsy and arguing about who had more hair. Chesterton's mayor, who was also in attendance at the party, also presented a framed plaque to Dan, revealing the citywide declaration that June 9th would hereafter be called Dan Day. It was a good time. Then an hour past sunset, the revelry was interrupted with the booms, bangs, and flashing of the celebratory pyrotechnics. Say that five times really fast. Accompanied by the oohs and ahs of all the guests. The evening was a huge success, and everybody had a good time, except Dan. Somewhere between the planning and implementation of the party, a few details had been overlooked. Dan was allergic to shellfish, so he had to settle for a couple of hard-boiled eggs from the refrigerator instead of the seafood casserole. He was a diabetic, so he couldn't eat the cake. After a struggle with PTSD early on, after returning from the war, he had finally, and only just barely, gotten his life back together when he gave up alcohol and never looked back. So champagne? No, thank you. And the fireworks. Dan was sitting in the same backyard as all of his friends, but where they heard the booms, bangs, and flashing of fireworks, Dan's mind was rocked by images of the war, where he had heard enough explosions, seen enough flashing lights, felt enough concussions, and watched enough of his friends, comrades, slash brothers fall than any of us should have to see in 1,000 lifetimes. And now, every year on June 9th, he gets reminded of the day the whole town honored him. Air quotes. In Chesterton, Indiana, the natives are all abuzz when June rolls around every year. Some even say that June is the most wonderful time of the year. Now, with that last statement, maybe some of you are aware where I'm going with this. This is a fictional tale of my own devise, the story of Dan. But the analogy is to a very non-fictional occurrence. I'm using this analogy to illustrate why Christians cannot celebrate Christmas. Speak about Christmas a little bit. A lot of this you guys, I'm sure all of it you guys already know. The origin of Christmas are no mystery. Every one of the dozens of references I reviewed in the preparation of this sermonette, even those that strongly advocated the value of Christmas as a Christian festival, acknowledged that the winter solstice had been celebrated by other cultures that far predated the birth of Christ. of Jesus. Most referencing the festival of Saturnalia, or take a stab at Latin, Dies Natalis Solis Invicti, which translates to English as Birthday of the Unconquerable Sun. It's described as a winter solstice holiday celebrated on December 25th in dedication to King Helios, a feast day observed as the point when the sun renews itself and the cold winter is defeated. The sun is reborn once again. I mean, that's straight from the Google. Like, when you search the term, that's what shows up in the main window, and then you can go links underneath. If you search exactly the term, the Dies Natalis Solis Invicti, literally the first entry is a Wikipedia article making the following statement. According to many historians, according to many historians, Christmas was set to December 25th because it was the day of the festival of Sol Invictus. This idea became popular, especially in the 18th and 19th century, of keeping Christian this holiday as a Christian holiday. And that's a statement that is also corroborated in the Catholic Encyclopedia. They actually own to it. They say, we did this. Everywhere you look, the connection is clear. Christmas is a festival paying homage to the sun as a deity that has been known over the ages by many different names since the beginning of man, almost. For example, the Egyptians knew him as Ra. Hindu knew him as Ravi. The Germanic, Norse, and Roman cultures knew it as Sol. And this is among many. The Greek knew him as Apollos or Helios. The Incan as Inti. Mesopotamian as Utu. Mayan as Akin. That's just I've found a website that listed all of them. And many cultures had multiple names for the sun god. Of course, there's dozens and dozens of cultures just listed on that page that I'm sure is not exhaustive. Sun worship is a practice that historians have dated as far back as the time of Noah's grandson, Nimrod. In fact, Fawcett's Bible Dictionary makes a statement that sun worship was the earliest idolatry. The rituals carried out in its name include, but are not limited to, endorsed thievery, drunkenness and revelry, adultery, including infidelity, human sacrifice, including infant sacrifice, and of course, by definition, idolatry. And this is something that we're specifically warned about. And if you could turn to Jeremiah 10, verses 2 through 4. I should add that I'm not going to go into the details while you're turning there. I'm not going to go into the details of all the rituals that we know as Christmas rituals, such as holly, such as mistletoe, such as... there's a long list. They all come directly from pagan. I mean, they all have the actions, when they're described, they're disturbing. They're not just perverted or there are strong condemnations of the human spirit. So in verse 2 of Jeremiah, verse 10, "Thus says the Lord, learn not the way of nations, nor be dismayed at the signs of the heavens, because the nations are dismayed at them, such as the days getting shorter, the sun seeming to die," quote unquote. "For the customs of the people are vanity. A tree from the forest is cut down and worked with an axe by the hands of craftsmen. They decorate it with silver and gold. They fasten it with hammer and nail so it cannot move." And this is a reference that often is interpreted as directly as a Christmas tree, but certainly as an idol, even if that is not directly accurate. Pope Gregory of Augustine in AD 519 quoted, "Do not destroy the temple of the English gods. Change them to Christian churches. Do not forbid the harmless customs that are associated with the ancient religions. Consecrate them to Christian uses." So really, what is the harm? Giving gifts, pretty lights, singing songs, time with family, chestnuts roasting on the open fire. I mean, those all don't sound that terrible. But the Bible forbids it. And if the Bible forbids it, we have no ground calling ourselves Christians if we keep it. Please turn to 1 Corinthians 10, verses 20 and 21. So starting in verse 20. Rather, that the things which the Gentiles sacrificed, they sacrificed to demons and not to God. I do not want you to have fellowship with demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the Lord's table and the table of demons. So, there is no compromise on the matter. It's clear. But the origins of Christmas are no secret. Google, a quick Google of pagan origins of Christmas, those four words, will give you enough reading material to make you go blind. Everyone knows it, at least in passing, and nobody seems to care. Dismissed by such classic and ignorant retorts as, Jesus is the reason for the season, or Christmas is about family, or that's not what Christmas means to me. That's my favorite, and you'll see why here as we conclude. I started this sermonette with the story of Dan. It's a harsh reality, but if they were to really trying to honor him, they would have considered him in how they chose to celebrate. So in reality, his friends and family went to great lengths and spent a great deal of money not to honor Dan, but to use Dan as an excuse to pursue their own desires to have a good time. Christmas is exactly the same thing. Now, it's not my intention to question the intentions of sincere Christians that celebrate Christmas. But we, you and I, know the truth of the matter. And the product of truth is conviction, and the cost of conviction is obedience. We cannot claim to honor God by doing things that he tells us not to do. We are talking about a being that has existed outside of the bounds of time, that has watched this ritual throughout history, the history of man. And I'll read the list again associated with this festival. Thievery, drunkenness, revelry, adultery, infidelity, human sacrifice, worst of all, infant sacrifice, and then idolatry. If Jesus really was the reason for the season, the only question worth asking is, what does the festival we call Christmas really mean to Jesus? Because Dan remembers what it was about, and Jesus remembers.